$80 million for Ange Kopitar. I mean, he's now the third highest paid player, will be next year behind Kane and Taves. Was an 11th overall pick back in 05. I think we all kind of remember when he came in. It's like, Jesus, Slovenia. He's from they've only got one rink in the whole country or whatever that story was. And then slowly come around, this guy is pretty good. I still don't know. It still feels weird to think of him as one of the elite highest paid players in the league. Should really?
I don't see this being weird at all. You know, it's funny, like, Doug McLean talks about that draft a lot. He has some good stories about that draft and how, you know, Columbus was one of the teams that could have taken him. And, you know, at that time, he talked about the risk. Like, can you sell exactly what you said, Slovenia, to your fan base? And it's a pretty interesting story about how he wishes he could do it, obviously, all over again. But that was exactly the decision that, you know, they faced. I don't see why it's weird at all. The guy is a two-time Stanley Cup champion. He's a critical player on a two-time Stanley Cup champion. He's their number one center. Like, if you ask, you know, Martin Hanzel, for example, who I think is one of the really underappreciated and underrated players of the game, who's the toughest guy to deal with in that conference, he'll tell you it's Kopitar. And he was getting more than this on the open market. He gave the Kings a little bit of a discount, because if he goes out there, he's getting what Kane and Taves got, which is 10.5. And my biggest question is he going to be the captain next year, and what this means for the future of the Kings?
Yeah. With that, every time a big contract comes for a team, it's going to mean the exit of somebody else. You mentioned a new captain. Who does this quite likely spell the end for then in L.A.?
Well, the funny thing about that is, Dean, is that the word I'm getting is that they're still going to try to re-sign Milan Lucic. And, you know, it's interesting. Chicago was in here on Friday night, and they beat Toronto. And they've won 11 in a row now. They beat the Canadiens last night. And the thing that stands out to me about them is, if you look at their roster, I think they've got 11 guys making $1 million or less. And I wonder if that's where we're going. You're going to have 7 or 8 guys making a fortune, and you're going to have 11 guys, well, it's a salary that we'd all be happy earning, except for you, Dean. You're already over there. But, like, it's a salary that the rest of us would already be happy earning, but they're going to be on the low end of the NHL totem pole. And, you know, I think that's where LA is probably headed to. You're going to have 7 or 8 guys making big money, and you're going to have 10 or 12 guys who are going to be interchangeable and making $1 million or less, and that's how the best teams are going to play.
Isn't that that's what I was sold on what the lockout was about. That was Bob Goodenow's big thing, was it's going to be stars over Kansas. The best players are going to get paid. Everyone else is going to make nothing. Not that it's nothing, but... And it's...
Well, you know what? It didn't happen in the last CBA because the cap kept on going up. But now it's going... Now we're seeing a bit of a flattening out, especially with the Canadian dollar being where it is. And yes, that's what we're going to... It's taken longer maybe than Bob Goodenow thought, but we're getting there. Like, we are really getting close there. Like, and, you know, a perfect example would be a guy that you guys know very well is Curtis Glencross. You know, he retired this year rather than, you know, playing for what he was going to get offered. But that is the kind of player who I think could get squeezed out as this CBA develops.
Well, we saw it all offseason too, Elliot. These older guys that we all thought were going to get major paydays, even some of the big names like Cody Franzen, took forever to get done.
Is it a good thing?
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I guarantee a lot of players will tell you it's not a very good thing, but it's where we're going. I mean,
but the stars, you know, sell the game, right?
And they win a year championships. Like, you look at Chicago, why have they won the championships? You got, is anybody arguing with the fact that Kane and Taves make 10-5? Nobody. No. They've won 3 Stanley Cups, and they've changed your franchise. I mean, the most underpaid player in the game might be Duncan Keith, and he's making $6 million. So if you're going to tell me the Chicago Blackhawks are going to say, we're going to pay Patrick Kane, Jonathan Taves, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Corey Crawford, and, you know, whoever else, I don't know and Marian Hossa, how can you argue that? If you're going to tell me that the Los Angeles Kings are going to pay Anze Kopitar, Drew Doughty, Jonathan Quick, and, you know, whoever else they're going to pay at the top of their food chain, you know, who's going to argue with that? I just can't. Now, you're always going to make your mistakes, and your mistakes are going to be harder to fix. But, you know, like, the thing is that you're going to look at the top players on these teams, who some of them who are going to combine for 5 Stanley Cups, and you're not going to argue. And, you know, the toughest thing is, if you look at it from an analytic point of view, you can make a real argument that sometime in this contract, you're going to look at Anze Kopitar making $10 million, and you're going to say, okay, that's too much. But I think it's easy to say that. It's a lot harder to walk away. Like, tell me, who's making that decision to walk away from Anze Kopitar right now?
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard call to make. Like, there's a lot of people who are very brave who say, oh, I would do it for sure. Yeah, I'd like to see them do it for sure in real life.
It is about what you're doing for me now, and you're talking about Kopitar in 7 years, but they owe money for what he did for them the last few years too, don't they? I mean, you win a team, a city, a championship.
Rhett's a former player, can you tell?
Huh. Well, you know, I read it. It's really interesting. Like, I read, if you read, there's 2 books about Bill Belichick I've read. And one is called The Blueprint, and it's about how they built their team. And Ken Holland told me to read that book. And the other book is called The Education of a Coach. And it's about him, too, and Mike Babcock told me to read that book. And Bill Belichick, and the NFL is kind of designed this way, but Bill Belichick talks about in both those books about how you kind of have to be ruthless. You know, guys can win you championships, and you've got to say, thanks very much, but sorry, I got to cut bait. And he's done that before with some of his guys, like Lawyer Malloy. Like, he's cut guys. Like, last year they cut Vince Wilfork, who we really loved. He traded Richard Seymour. Like, these guys were critical players on Patriots championships team, and he cut them. And Bill Belichick is one of the few guys who've been able to say, I'm not paying you for past performance. I'm paying you on the future. But I think generally, it's pretty hard to do it. Your fans don't always accept it. You've got to have the credibility of your fan base plus to pull that off. And there's a lot of guys who don't feel they can pull that off.
Do you feel like this is what Tampa Bay is going through with Stamkos right now? That they know how valuable he is to the franchise and that he's been so good for them, but that maybe they're having a tough time justifying all that money he's going to need? If it's 10 for Kopitar, it's got to be more than that for Stamkos, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, Ryan, I think Steve Yzerman has the ability to do it. I think he's got, and I say this with respect, I think he's got a bit of Belichick in him. You know, he did it with Marty St. Louis. He thought that everything was solved after they won the gold medal in Sochi. They got back. Marty St. Louis was not happy still, and he traded him. You know, he got rid of him. And he said to the Rangers, you know, he was in a situation where he could only trade him to one team. And he said to that team, if you want him, you can have him, but you got to make a good deal. And I think that Yzerman does have that in him, and I think that's exactly why we are where we are. I don't know where this is going to go, but I do think that if there's one guy who's got sort of the stomach to go through this and say, I'm not going to do it, it might just be Steve Yzerman.
Elliot Friedman, our hockey insider here on Boomer and Warner in the Morning. It's been an incredible first half for the Washington Capitals. Barry Trotz has those guys humming. They've got a great young player in Evgeny Kuznetsov. Their goaltender is likely going to win the Vezina. I'm very curious, with the trade deadline coming up, the 29th of February, Brian McClellan still kind of a green general manager. Last year he tinkers a little bit. The Glenn Cross trade didn't really work out. I wonder how much pressure he's feeling this year with this team in win-now mode to go and try and hit a home run at the deadline.
Well, I think they're all in. Like, they've pushed their chips on the table, and they said, okay, we're in. And they should be. They're one of the best teams in the league. And, you know, you see how well they're playing right now. Like, this is a year where you gamble. You take your shot. And I don't think anybody can fault the Washington Capitals for doing it. You know, I reported a few weeks ago that if Orpik had been out, they would have taken a run at Bufflin. I still think it's possible, depending on what happens with Bufflin and in Winnipeg that, you know, he could be a target for him. I think Washington is definitely in on adding. I don't think they have a lot to add, mind you. You know, I know they were looking for a center even before Jay Beagle got hurt. They have Mike Richards in there now. He just played his first games. I'm curious to see where that's going to go. But so I don't know if they're still looking for centers, depending on how Richards plays. But I do think that Washington is all in, and they will be looking to add, and they should because they're good enough.
They are good enough. I saw the number this morning. Were they 10-0-1 after a loss?
They don't lose very many anyway.
Yeah, well, I've mentioned it, and then these guys have kind of made fun of it. The pact that they made at the start of the season, that no matter what, after a loss, that next game was even more important. They were not going to lose two in a row. They were not going to go on losing streaks, and really they haven't.
No, and you know what talked about that too was Jim Neal in Dallas, is that he talked about the Detroit mentality. It was very much like that. He said when they were the best, you know, their guys, if they lost, the Eisermans, the Lidstroms, the Shanahan would say, he actually mentioned Chris Draper, too, was a pretty important part of that team. Okay, we lost one. We're not losing this next one. And, you know, Dallas was pretty good. They went about 30-plus games before they started to hit their slow spot. But Washington is definitely that team. I do think that that's a special mentality that you have to have.
What is your opinion, and then what do you expect is going to happen with this John Scott All-Star Game thing?
You know, my opinion has been pretty clear. I don't like it, and not because I don't think he deserves it. Like, if people want to do that, it's fine. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't think it's fine. I think it's, you know, I don't care what anybody says now. It was about making fun of them and the All-Star Game. I don't like it. I feel badly for him. I think that he's caught in an almost impossible situation. I think the guy's played almost 300 NHL games. You know, Rhett, you had a long career. You know how hard it is to play 300 games. I don't care what your role is. If you do that, that's to be respected. You know, I spoke to Don Maloney on Saturday, and he was upset. He was upset with the idea that he would bury a guy and intentionally bury a guy in the AHL. And before I wrote it and reported, I called a few other guys and said, what do you think? And they said they think he's telling the truth. You know, to me, and I've learned a lot more yesterday, I really think that the reason guys this got ugly was because Arizona got trapped on their roster. And here they are, they're in second place in the Pacific Division. They're in a playoff race out of nowhere. And I think that there were people internally in the organization who were like, we need to get a player up here to play. And they felt trapped that they couldn't send Scott down because he's an all-star. And I think, and I didn't know that when I spoke to Maloney, and I don't know if he'll talk about it. But I've heard in the last 24 hours that became a very big issue, that they felt trapped. And I think it became a problem. And the other thing, too, is I think the league wanted Arizona to keep him on the roster until after the All-Star break. I don't think the league – I'm now pretty convinced that the league didn't want to bury John Scott in the Myers. I think they were just like, all right, we don't like this, but we'll deal with it. He'll play in the game, and we'll move on. This is not what the NHL wanted, but everybody was trapped here. Arizona had to make a move or felt that they wanted to make the trade. They felt they couldn't wait. Montreal didn't want the player, but if they wanted to make the trade, they had to take the player. I don't think the league wanted John Scott to be banished now. That I think they were just like, okay, we'll throw their hands up and we'll deal with it. And everybody's mad. The fans are mad. The league is mad. The Coyotes are mad. The Canadiens are mad. Everybody is mad. And like, my solution was, when I wrote this on Saturday, was have him go, get his ovation, and maybe make an announcement saying, okay, here's your captain, Drew Doughty or Daniel Sedin or Mark Giordano or whatever. I don't know. I think this has gotten so far out of control it's deeper. Like, even when I wrote on Saturday, it's even deeper than I realized this was getting.
Is it
it's
because we're taking it too seriously, though? I mean, come on. We're talking about a guy that, yeah, you respect. He's played 300 games, and that's awesome. But very simply, if he'd have said from the start, I'm not going, which he knows he shouldn't have been going, then it takes care of itself. And I don't care one way or the other. But now we're treating an all-star game like it actually matters.
You know what, Rhett? I have to tell you, I find the fans want Scott there, but I still think it's to rip on him. I don't care what anybody says.
Exactly.
But I find a lot of players are mad. Like, you know, like, especially, you know what it comes down to? It comes down to guys who don't get to go to All-Star games a lot, and they understand why this means something to Scott. Because a lot of guys who don't get invited to all, like Brian Elliott blew his off his vacation last year to play, right? So guys who don't get invited a lot, they understand why it means something to him. But it means something to them, too. And I don't know. I cannot believe we're at this point, but I can't believe how mad everybody is. The fans are mad. The league is mad. The Coyotes are mad. The Canadians are mad. Scott's mad. Like, I cannot believe this has gotten to this point.
It's because we all love to throw our hands up and complain. I mean, come on, give us something to complain about.
Yeah, we're outraged.
Absolutely. So outraged. In Calgary, though, they are mad.
Yeah, we're just so invested. We're completely, I don't know how this could happen.
I really believe this. I don't care what anybody says. This was to goof on him.
Oh, for sure it was. Absolutely it was.
And anybody who says it wasn't is not being honest.
And you know what? Even worse this year, 3-on-3. You want to send him to an all-star game?
Don Maloney said to me, Rhett, is that he said that 5-on-5, no problem. 3-on-3, problem.
So do we have a conclusion to it? Do we know what's happening?
Not yet. I asked his agent on Saturday if he was going to back out. He said he hadn't made that decision. I'm inclined to just say that the NHL should just let him go now.
See, the funny thing, I want to actually ask you about the trade because there's two really young defensemen that I'm curious about, and we spent all this time on John Scott, who, as good as a guy as he is in the role he plays, I mean, I don't know if he's in the league in 2 years.
I don't get it either. I was the guy that was never going to get invited to an all-star game. I don't understand what his obsession with it is.
You know what? I think I think there's some element, Rhett, of this is a league that suspended you 3 times and you've lost $80,000. Don't help them. I think some people have told him that. Rhett, would you have liked to go to an All-Star game once?
If I'd have earned it, not as a joke.
Yeah, that's the problem. I think there's some people in his ear that have given him some really bad advice.
He knows this is a joke, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he's playing along with him. That's all fine and good, but he should be smart enough to realize, you know what, it is, for some reason, a ridiculous reason, we're actually talking about it. He should just smarten up and say, this has gotten out of control.
Yeah.
We should not be discussing this that much.
It is.
It was fun for a while. Yeah,
it is hilarious. Like, there's part of me that likes that the NHL has to go through this because it is so stupid. Like, very smart and highly paid people are having to deal with this lunacy. It almost makes me smile.
You know what? I got to tell you something, guys. This is why I don't like this. I'm not going to say exactly what I did. But in university, I was part of a group of guys who pulled a stunt on somebody. And it wasn't good. I have always felt terrible about it. I made my peace with the guy. I apologized. But I remember the pain it caused, and like when it went really badly. And there's a chance that if he plays, it could go really badly. And I don't like it. I don't think it's funny. I think it's online bullying is what it is. It really is.
Yeah, it's not that for sure.
But he controls it. I'm not going. It's very simple. Tweet it out. I'm out.
Yeah, And you know what? I agree with you, Rhett. He should. But like I said, there's a little bit of, this league has treated me badly, so I'm getting them back now.
You know what? We all feel that. I felt that when I left. Oh, they owe me. I played I-700. The league doesn't owe you anything. You owe the league. Yeah. You got to play 300 games.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that.
So there's that. Can you give us any more details?
Stop it.
Of what?
Of what you did.
No, not a freaking chance. No, this is not a chance.
That's what I like about you. You're so innocent and kind that here you are years later, and it's still kind of, you got in your backpack. You carry it around.
I could tell you're blushing.
I would tell you this. It would change your opinion of me.
Oh,
it really would.
Nothing could, Elliot. Nothing could. Have a good week, man. We'll talk to you Friday. Thanks for this, as always.
All right. I just want to say, we mentioned on Saturday night, you know, I think
yes.
Their team's calling on Chris Russell, and I think the Flames are telling them we're still trying to sign him.